Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. America, happy Sunday morning, and welcome to the Sunday brunch edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. Oh my gosh, we got such a great show for you today. We've got some great guests. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after these messages. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I want to begin tonight off with a guest who's doing way more good for society than I think we could ever comprehend. He is making a difference every day. You've known him from television for years. Kirk Cameron's beloved as an actor, as a filmmaker, as an author. But he set out on a new mission a few years ago, one that I've been able to witness. It's an amazing thing. He and Trent Talbot at Brave Books are inspiring and educating school-age children without the need or desire to indoctrinate them. How about that? That's a great idea. For far too long, childhood shows haven't been educational. Rather, they've been filled with unnecessary drama that doesn't help a child prepare for everyday life. Our next guest has been changing that dynamic from the top to the bottom, from school libraries to school book shows. He has been making an enormous impact. He's my good friend, and we're lucky to welcome in studio today, Kirk Cameron. Kirk, great to have you here.
John, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You are a tornado on the landscape of education. I think everything you're doing is making such a remarkable Impact. And I saw some news on our site yesterday, a new television show. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a brand new television show that is coming to your phone, to your computer, through YouTube, Rumble, and other free platforms. And it's called Adventures with Iggy and Mr. Kirk.
All right.
So we've taken the success and the momentum that's been generated together with Brave Books through the library readings, the story hours, and then taking on Scholastic Books and the American Library Association, and realize that we need to get into the screens because the power of storytelling is huge. Children are not only, they have their imaginations caught on fire with storytelling, but it transports them into other realms of belief and values and new realities, and they begin to identify with the characters in those stories, which is what's contributing to the identity crisis among children today in the country. A new report showed that a third of Gen Z identifies themselves as gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, non-binary, queer, and we see this with a 4,000% increase in non-binary children in New Jersey alone.
Yeah.
So why not make stories with hero characters that children want to identify with that lead them to the pro-God, pro-America values that lead to our blessing and our liberties? That's what we're trying to do with Adventures with Iggy and Mr. Kirk.
I love it. Now, Iggy is a character from an earlier book of yours, right? And
so
tell us a little bit about it.
Iggy is actually a brand new character.
Oh, he's a new character.
Now, you're
okay,
right.
Great.
Now, the books that Brave Books has written all contain animal characters that all know each other. They live in the same world called Freedom Island. But Iggy is a brand new character. Iggy's an iguana. In fact, we've got a world-class puppeteer from Jim Henson and the Muppets from Sesame Street all those years who's created Iggy. And he's my little buddy who lives in a treehouse in Mr. Kirk's backyard. And he's got a supercomputer that teleports us as the viewers into Freedom Island, where we get to read all of these great stories about the sanctity of life, about the fruit of the spirit, about the First and Second Amendments, about the dangers of socialism and critical race theory. Kids get to learn these stories in ways where they're having fun and in ways where parents can trust.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about it. I'm excited about the way that we're making it. We're crowdfunding it. We're not relying on Hollywood to pay for it. So that way there's no strings attached to the money and the values stay intact.
That's important. There's no doubt about it. For people who want to get involved in this, before I skip over that, what's the best way for them to get into crowdfunding?
Go to Brave, watchbrave.com.
Right?
Go to watchbrave.com, and there's all kinds of really exciting awards and rewards for people who help support. For example, you can come to the red carpet premiere of the release of the series. You can also have one of your kids or grandkids in one of the TV show episodes.
How cool is that?
You can help write one of the books at Brave Books. All kinds of fun, great stuff. And we encourage everybody to do it so that we can get two seasons completed this summer. And we want to launch at the end of the summer.
How cool is that? That's so exciting, folks. Be sure to go check that out. Kirk, I think a lot of people look at the moment we're in, and after COVID particularly, there were so many things that were brought to light that we didn't know about what our children were learning, what was going on in the school system.
Yep.
And then there was that sort of stop moment where, all right, we're going to fight this. And there's different ways to fight this, right? Some of it is by showing up at school boards, trying to force the changes in policies. But some of it is just in creating positive role models and positive messages in a time when so much of the news and so much of the messaging in our world is so negative. It seems like what you've done with Brave, with your book, with this new show, creates a positive alternative in the marketplace. People can just look and say, well, I just want that positive thing. That's much better for my kids. Was that part of the strategy?
Absolutely. That's what I think we have just neglected to do. You know, we've heard the phrase that politics even is downstream from culture. The culture shapers are often the storytellers, the creatives, the songwriters. And kids are learning more from their phone coming out of Instagram or TikTok than they are learning out of their schools. So why not lean into the areas that shape culture, that fill the hearts and minds of children? And I think people are coming out of the woodwork to do that, including world-class scriptwriters, songwriters, storytellers, puppeteers, and others who are dying to get away from Disney. They want to get out of Hollywood, like me, like Lee Allen Baker, and others who say, give us an alternative, and we would gladly go there. Yeah. And that's what's beginning to happen.
Oh, there's no doubt. And I had this extraordinary experience last year, I guess. It's hard to believe it's only been a year ago. Went to one of the readings that you do with children. I had my book coming out.
It was so fun.
Oh, my gosh. We're in Philadelphia,
yeah. The
land of liberty, where we were all born. And the parents were just, they were so grateful for what you started.
They're
craving it. They were like starved and they saw food for the first time.
That's right. And they're the kind of people you want to hang out with.
Yeah, that's true.
There were so many people at those book readings that could never get into the reading room
because
there wasn't enough room or time. Instead of getting angry and breaking windows and flipping over cop cars because they didn't get what they wanted,
right. What
did they do? They sat down on the floor, opened up their book bags, and moms were reading books themselves. They were singing God Bless America, Amazing Grace.
They broke up a song, that's right.
And praying for our nation and our country. This is the kind of thing that people want to get back to. And if you're wondering, what can I do to turn a country around that looks like it's on the brink of collapse? Well, you could help us make a show that amplifies the light and increases the good. Go to watchbrave.com and help us make this show.
Yeah, listen, it's such a simple thing. When we were in Philadelphia, you filled the room six times over. So we had a crowd outside. And when you would read, I'd go out for a few seconds, talk to people. And this woman came up to me. It was such an amazing woman. She said, my parents are of the Reagan generation. And in the Reagan generation, they used to talk about the silent majority, that there's a larger group. But as she said to me, she looked up at me and she said, I have these two children. One was special needs. One was in regular school. And she said, silence is not an option anymore. We've got to step in the void. But I don't want to be a protester. I just want to do something positive. You've opened that door. And I think when we look at the parallel economy that's out there now, there's an alternative to Amazon. There's an alternative to Scholastic Books.
Yeah.
There's an alternative to YouTube. It seems to be growing every day. Almost every void in the marketplace that might have been taken over by negative forces, there's now an alternative. How long does it take before that becomes really widespread and mainstream as you look at this parallel economy?
That's a great question. I hope it comes quickly.
Yeah.
I don't think we have a whole lot of time to waste. But I do believe, I don't want to underestimate the potential of the impossible happening in our lifetime, in our generation. I mean, what if this national setback is really a divine setup for a spiritual comeback led by the family of faith? If that happens, we could have another great awakening on our hands, a complete turnaround of sentiment toward God and toward family and the values that our country is built on, and reform government, church, education, the economy, everything.
Yeah.
And we could have the finest hour in our lifetime if people really get back to what matters most. And I'm hoping to be somehow at the center of that.
So I was at dinner the other night with my family, and they knew you were coming on today. And my son asked this, and it was interesting. All the success you've had, you were a major television star. You've made movies. You've made books. You raised a beautiful family. What motivated you to step into this void at this moment in history? I mean, you didn't have to. You could have lived comfortably. You decided to get in the griddle. Why?
Well, Some years ago, I made a documentary called Monumental, and it was really motivated by the fact that I'm a dad with six kids in the world, and I'm concerned about the culture that we're leaving them. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to talk with Glenn Beck, and I asked him, why do you think people are waking up right now? And he said, I think when something so precious as liberty is on the line, he said, God's put something in our heart called a conscience that starts to sound off. And everyone's smoke detectors are going off right now, knowing that liberty is going up in flames and we've got to do something. And so I think that we've been riding on the efforts of those who went before us. We have so many ancestors, our founding fathers, our forefathers, and even my grandfather who fought in the greatest generation, who did so much, and we've been coasting on this stuff.
Yeah.
And now we realize we've got to nourish the roots. And if we allow others to sever the root, the United States will be no more. It will collapse, and this culture of destruction will just pave the way for a reset of China here in North America or something worse.
Well, we're going to leave it there. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, more exclusive interviews right here on John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back, everyone. On Monday of next week, the United States Supreme Court is going to hear two controversial cases concerning new laws in Florida and Texas aimed at curbing social media censorship. Now, in response to the legislation, two nonprofits dedicated to fighting for free speech filed lawsuits against the states, arguing that both laws violate the First Amendment. So joining me now to talk about these cases, the perfect person to talk about them, Carl Szabo. He is the vice president and general counsel for NetChoice, one of the lead plaintiffs in the lawsuit, and he joins the show right now. Carl, thank you for being here, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so I want to ask you about the premise of these cases. I know you said they're very similar. Now, the legislation alleges to curb social media censorship, so it sounds like free speech, but that's not necessarily the case, is it?
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. Look, I'm a Republican. Whenever I see Republicans blocked or removed on social media platforms, it upsets me. It frustrates me. I get it. It's tough to see. But I don't want the government to come in and start telling private businesses what type of content they have to carry or what type of content they have to remove. We are already seeing this type of effort from the Biden administration to force websites to remove COVID information that the Biden administration doesn't like and promote the stuff that the Biden administration wants you to hear, like everything's great and the economy is doing well. So what we're seeing in the states of Florida and Texas is a similar effort. And it was created with the purpose and the guise of making sure that Republicans couldn't be removed from social media platforms. You know what? That may sound like a great idea, but then you start to really think about it. And ultimately what it is government-compelled speech. And if Florida and Texas can force websites to host content that they don't want to host, you can be darn sure that states like California and New York are going to try the same thing, except it's not going to be good for conservatives. So we brought suit, and we are before the U.S. Supreme Court under one simple standard. If a private business has the right to decide what content it shows, what it curates, and what it allows on its site and services, then that same rule must apply to the internet.
Okay, so, you know, if I walk into a diner here in Los Angeles and I see a sign on the wall that says we reserve the right to refuse business to anybody, how is that different from this? I mean, social media companies are businesses, right?
Yeah, but it's actually a bit more akin to something like a newspaper or your show, for example. You get to decide who comes on and speaks, what issues you're going to discuss, and how that content gets arranged. Social media platforms are the exact same thing. We are much closer to newspapers when it comes to editorial discretion. And when it comes also to websites and platforms, many of them actually say, no, we only want to discuss this one thing. We only want to talk about, for example, NFL football on our website. So if you want to come in and talk about Major League Baseball or basketball, we're not going to let you come in. We're not going to let you have those conversations because we only want to talk about football. That's the type of editorial discretion that we're talking about. And that's the type of editorial discretion that is denied under the Florida and Texas laws.
Okay. How does this tie in with Section 230? Because Section 230 was a big hot conversation about a year and a half ago and about a year before that. And this time, the end of last year. How does it tie in with that?
Yeah, so Section 230 is kind of a side issue for the purposes of this conversation. The reason Section 230 was needed is because platforms were being held responsible for the content that they published, that they managed, that they removed, that they promoted. And that is the very same type of editorial discretion that is protected by the First Amendment. In fact, it is because of our First Amendment speech that Section 230 was needed. Now, at the end of the day, all Section 230 does is just makes it harder for attorneys and ambulance chasers to hunt down people and try to sue them into oblivion. And it actually is one of the best tools for alternative views to be discussed online. But fortunately, Section 230 is a different issue. What we are looking at right here is something that the Supreme Court looked at just last term when it was about a website designer not wanting to make websites for gay marriages. And the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision, said, you know what, that business cannot be forced by the state of Colorado to create a website that goes against its values. Same thing's true here. Websites cannot be forced to host content that goes against their values or their community's wishes.
So I want to ask about, you know, the issue of Section 230 as it pertains to social media, because there have been a bumper crop of smaller social media companies that have cropped up. Parler was one of them, I remember, and I think that it ultimately went under, or maybe that was Gab. I don't want to defame anybody. But there were so many of these smaller social media companies. So at issue was, so someone could effectively go on that platform, type out something slanderous of a public official. They could say something that, by someone's opinion, invoked violence, and therein lies the liability issue. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in essence, before Section 230, websites would be responsible. So if website did absolutely nothing to remove horrible content, let's say pornography, constitutionally protected, probably don't want to see it. So if they decide we're going to remove pornography, suddenly they are going to be responsible for every single post that is put up there. And what will end up happening if Section 230 is repealed, because right now it says that they are not responsible for the content created by others, if it gets repealed, what will happen is websites will suddenly remove any potentially controversial content, anything that goes against the general narrative. So if you were to post content saying masks don't work to stop COVID, or you were going to say that we need to reopen the schools, anything that goes against the mainstream narrative, websites would almost be required to remove it because they could be sued just for hosting your views on their site. In fact, Section 230 protects individuals who engage in retweets. So if you retweeted something about Dominion stealing the election, Section 230 keeps you from being sued by Dominion. And what it does is it just says, look, if you create content, if you post content, yeah, you're still liable. But just because you host content or you engage in content moderation, we're not going to make you liable for the content of other people. So Section 230 is actually one of the best tools for alternative views, alternative information, and alternative discussions that would otherwise be too liable and too litigious to even keep on a website.
Stick around, and we will be back in just a moment after these messages from our sponsors.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. but you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back, everybody. Every year around this time, CPAC dominates the conservative news headlines and cycle, especially after President Trump speaks, which usually comes on the last day of the event. And while I'm disappointed that I'm missing this year's event taking place over on the East Coast, there are a lot of candidates up and down the ballot who have not ventured to the main event because they are continuing to meet with constituents and their campaigns across their respective jurisdictions. And our next guest is doing that very thing. He is Bill Igel. He is a veteran, a small business owner, and a state senator who is running to be Missouri's next governor. And lucky for us, we get to learn about his candidacy and the top issues facing Missourians right now. Bill, it's great to meet you. Thank you so much for being here, sir.
Amanda, thanks for having me. I'm always pleased to be on.
I love it. And, you know, Missouri has a special place in my heart. I had never been there until our network did a Save America Freedom Tour, and we got to do a number of locations in Missouri. It's such a beautiful, spectacular state. Talk to us about what issues are the most important to the folks of Missouri.
Well, you're absolutely right. Missouri is a beautiful state, and it's a big red state. And, you know, Missouri is a state that I feel ought to be leading this country, along with the Floridas and the Texases and the Tennessees of this country, as it relates to implementing conservative policy. And yet, one of the biggest issues facing us here in the state is the fact that we have a real problem with some Republicans who really campaign on a certain message, but then they get into office and do something else. I think we call them rhinos. And we have a status quo that's really kind of kept Missouri, kind of held us back a little bit. And so the electorate here in Missouri, particularly the Republican electorate, is very frustrated right now. They're really looking for that fighter. They're looking for that champion that's going to have their back. And, you know, overwhelmingly, Missouri chose Donald Trump in each of the last two elections. And I think they want to see that type of fighter that's going to have their back in the governor's mansion. So I've made kind of a habit of making the swamp uncomfortable down in Jefferson City over the past 7 years while I've been in the state Senate. And I think that's precisely the kind of message to get Missouri on track, support the policies of Donald J. Trump. And even if the swamp doesn't like it, we're going to keep fighting.
Lordy, that swamp fight is literally everywhere, not just in Washington, D.C. I want to ask you about that with respect to your race, because you are running against Jay Ashcroft. Yes, for our viewers, you recognize that name. He's the son of John Ashcroft, former U.S. Attorney General. And I know that on veterans issues in particular, because you are a veteran, that is one of your biggest concerns. And it doesn't seem like for your opponent, Jay Ashcroft, that ranks too high on his list of priorities. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, and it's very unfortunate. This past weekend, we had our first gubernatorial forum with all the candidates on the stage. And when asked very directly what he would do to support the veterans in the state, Jay Ashcroft basically said, we don't need to do anything special for the veterans. And the crowd was stunned. And now people across Missouri are stunned that he would so callously just say that, hey, veterans don't matter. And you know, I got to tell you, for me, it's personal. You know, I served in the Air Force. Like you said, I went overseas. I fought in the war on terror back in 2004. You know, Jay Ashcroft's dad was part of the administration that literally sent me overseas to fight those wars. And I know there are veterans in this state right now who are suffering some of the after effects of the horrors that they witnessed in those wars. I lost friends overseas during those wars. And to have somebody like Jay Ashcroft just really flippantly say that, you know, veterans don't really matter. They're not any more special than anybody else, and we don't need to really focus on that. It was just stunning for me. I can't believe that a statewide official would ever say that about veterans. He's taking a lot of flack right now, as he should. And I think that that's going to be a real decisive moment where people are going to once again see that, you know, just because you have a familiar last name doesn't really mean that you know what you're talking about. So we're going to always stand with veterans. I'm always going to stand with veterans. And I tell you what, in an Igel administration, we're going to stand with our veterans.
I love that. I can't imagine having the posture that veterans don't deserve special treatment. You fight for our country and you put your life on the line. I think that probably puts you in the very special category. But who am I to say? I wanted to ask you, though, about something else that's very special, I know, to you and Missourians, and that is protecting your state's constitution. Now, you've got SJR 74. This is going to protect your state from illegal voting and out-of-state special interest hijacking the whole process. Talk to us about that and how I know Missouri Republicans are fighting tooth and nail for that.
Well, I got to tell you, it was a great day here in the state of Missouri. For the first time, we passed initiative petition reform, which is that protection to the Constitution out of the Missouri Senate. And that was a result of the efforts of the Freedom Caucus, myself and a few other senators who were really fighting against leadership who were trying to silence us. You know, they were, as we were making them more and more uncomfortable over the past few weeks, they were doing everything from stripping our chairmanships from us to stripping our parking spaces from us, but we weren't going to be silent. You know, on the national level, you know, the leftists are doing the same thing to Donald J. Trump. They're trying to silence him, accusing him of crimes he didn't commit. They're out there trying to say that he should be taken off the ballot. They're trying to silence him, and he's not going to be silent. Well, I tell you what, we weren't silent, and as a result of our willingness to fight these guys, fight this swamp anywhere and everywhere, we got that bill passed out of the Missouri Senate today. It's on its way to the House of Representatives, and if everything goes well, we're going to have a petition from the legislature on the ballot for the people of Missouri to consider, and I think they're going to be very supportive.
That's awesome. Congratulations. You are very vocally supporting President Trump for the election this November. What is it about him for you that makes you want to endorse him so vocally?
Well, he's a fighter. You know, I think that one thing that can be said about Donald J. Trump is here's a guy that doesn't take orders from the swamp. He doesn't take orders from the status quo. And, you know, if you look at Washington, D.C., and the same is true in all our state capitals, there are a lot of folks down there that don't care about everyday Americans or everyday Missourians that are trying to tell people in positions of power what to do. And the reason that the swamp hates Donald J. Trump so much is that he doesn't do what they tell him to do. And he doesn't march to their drumbeat. He works for the people of this country, and he's willing to challenge and hold them accountable when they're not on the side of the American people. So I tell you what, I love that about him. I think that he's better represents that than anybody else in the Republican presidential field, which, of course, is over now. And so we're going to start moving towards the general election. And right now, it doesn't just seem like Republicans are starting to rally around Donald J. Trump. You know, we've got independents and even some Democrats that are rallying around Donald J. Trump because folks are angry about what's going on in their country. My message to the folks, if you're out there, you're angry maybe at Republicans that don't do what they say they were going to do, or the whoever it is, if you're angry and frustrated, you're not alone. There are millions of Missourians. There's millions, tens of millions of Americans who are going to stand up in 2024 and start taking their country back from all these globalists, from these leftists that want to destroy our communities. We're going to be led by Donald J. Trump in Washington, D.C. And my hope is I can help lead the state of Missouri in that fight right here from the Show Me State.
Oh, thanks a lot, Amanda, for joining me on this. What a great interview. I learned a lot. We're going to be right back with more things just like this right after the commercial break. Welcome back, everybody. If you were reading JustTheNews.com last week or watching the show, you heard about the extraordinary number of investor firms that are fleeing from a climate coalition. Another sign that the ESG movement, the environmental social governance movement, is in retreat right now. People are waking up to its principles, its indoctrination, and its negative impact on the marketplace. People will go into the Wall Street to make money, not to create ideological change. I think people are waking up to that. And more is on the way. We saw this weekend, President Biden announced that he is going to ease his electric vehicle mandates, another sign that the cart is before the horse. Well, we're very lucky because our next guest is on the front lines of this very important battle. Daniel Cameron was the Attorney General of Kentucky, one of the brightest stars in the Republican Party. He currently serves as the CEO of the 1792 Exchange and previously has been working on ESG issues for many, many years. Daniel, great to have you on the show today.
John, it's a delight to be here. Thank you for having me today to talk about ESG and 1792 Exchange.
Yeah. So for people who haven't heard what the 1792 Exchange is, it's such an exciting idea and already very impactful. Just remind people what you're doing there.
Well, look, the 1792 Exchange is about, one, empowering businesses, but also making sure that corporations get back to the business of business. John, you know that Michael Jordan said famously in the 90s that Republicans buy shoes too. And what he meant by that is regardless of what your political affiliation is, companies, organizations, folks that have an opportunity to talk about a particular product should be focused on producing the best product possible as opposed to pushing an agenda. And so 1792 wants to walk alongside corporations and also, by the way, let consumers know what corporations are doing. And so we have a database that we put forward called the Corporate Bias Rating that gives a rating on companies as it relates to essentially how woke have they gone. Again, we want companies to steer back to the middle, back to making good, high quality products for hardworking Americans all across this country. And that's what 1792 is about. And I'm excited. I started in January, beginning of January, as the CEO. We've got a wonderful team that is committed, again, to walking alongside corporations and businesses to make sure that they are just back to the business of business.
Yeah, so important. Just make good products, good return on investment for your investors. That's all the American marketplace ever asked of them. Somehow they got their finger in the wrong drink a few years ago. I want to talk a little bit about the ESG movement. I think you've done, I've watched you do some really great breakdowns of this. A lot of it is rooted in the Chinese social credit score concepts that Communist China has spread across the world. It also seems to have giving Chinese companies, those that involve slave labor, those that involve solar technologies, a leg up against American companies. There's a lot of national security threat behind the ESG movement, isn't there?
Look, I think at the end of the day, ESG is a acronym that really is about destroying this country's energy independence and bolstering the ability of our foreign adversaries to make us dependent on their energy resources. And you mentioned China specifically. Again, China, we know, uses slave labor. Some of their energy companies use slave labor to produce energy. But at the end of the day, if you look at some of these rankings, and of course, MSCI just came out with a ranking here recently that gave better scores to some of these China energy companies than American energy companies, simply because the American energy company is in a industry that they don't like. And the China, even though they're using slave labor, is about renewables. Therefore, they get a better score. That is, again, undermining our independence here in this country and our energy independence specifically, making us more reliant on our foreign adversaries. That's not a good place to go. That's certainly not, John, as you noted, good for our security from our foreign adversaries. The more that we have to rely on them for energy, goods, resources, whatever it may be, is something that is not considered a win for the United States. And we've got to make sure, again, that at the end of the day, we are energy independent. 1792 is about pushing back against this ESG. As the Attorney General of Kentucky, I broke it down like this. It's about making sure that the return on investment to teachers, firefighters, and police officers is as best as it can be. And the way that in which you ensure that return on investment is good is to move away from virtue signaling and supporting ESG and getting back into investing in our fossil fuels. And again, 1792 wants to make sure that that, along with steering our corporations back to the middle, is what we do.
Yeah. And a lot of the investment firms are beginning to wake up to that. I saw some of them recently make comments saying, hey, fossil fuel is here for long. It's an all of the above. It's not get rid of them. It's not even feasible. So I think the market's waking up to that very powerful message. Now, you talked about the effect of ESG on national security. I want to talk about its effect on retirement security, because a lot of pension funds are using the MSCI and other ratings and beginning to integrate ESG into their investment decisions, which could lower our ability to prepare for our retirement, right?
Look, it's, again, as you know, I talked about earlier, I mean, this is really about, you know, when we talk about the retirement plans, as me as a state office holder, when I was the attorney general, we focused a lot on our teachers, firefighters, and police officers that are heavily invested in our state pension systems. And when you have a model and approach that puts ESG over the return on investment to our shareholders, it's detrimental to people who have been working in a system, to folks that have been paying into retirement so that at the end of their days of work, they've got a nest egg to rely on. Yeah. But if we go down the road of ESG, that nest egg will not be there. Again, to your point, it's got to be an all of the above energy strategy. We certainly don't want to dissuade people from an all of an above approach. what we do not want and what will not be beneficial to folks, whether you're a teacher, a firefighter, a police officer, if you got a 401k, whatever your investment might look like. We don't want to put them in a situation where the folks that are handling those investments are walking away from fossil fuels, because we know that over the course of history, if you look at how some of these portfolios have performed, there is consistent performance from fossil fuels industry. Yeah. And we cannot boycott and we cannot refuse to give money to those industries that, one, make us energy independent, and then, two, provide for maximum return to shareholders that are those teachers, firefighters, and police officers.
Yeah, and there's early evidence that the ESG funds underperform often. That was part of the reason some of these investment firms got out. So the data shows exactly that danger. I got about a minute left. I want to ask you, Daniel, about something that is also in retreat right now, and that is these electric vehicle mandates. The market simply hasn't embraced EVs the way Joe Biden and Democratic governors have tried to force them into the marketplace. What's your take on that, and what lessons should be learned from the early failures of the electric vehicle policies?
Well, look, whenever the federal government gets into pushing a mandate on folks, particularly when it comes to trying to tell you what vehicles to drive and what power source to use, it's not a good place for the federal government to be. And we're seeing that play out as it relates to battery powered or electric vehicles. Again, there's been a number of articles that have demonstrated how challenging it can be for a person to get not just across the country, but maybe just a couple of states away from their original destination. They're having difficulty finding places to charge, the time and duration of charging. And oh, by the way, the battery life can get consistently worse the longer you have the vehicle. And so when you combine all those things, and look, and I live here in Kentucky. And the idea that you're going to tell somebody in a rural community that they've got to drive 50 miles to get to a charger, it just doesn't make sense with the way that we work here this Commonwealth and, frankly, across this country.
Now, that's why we do interviews, so we can learn news, give you facts so you can make up your own mind. Information, not indoctrination. News, not noise. All right, we're going to give you more of it right after this commercial break.
Welcome back, everyone. While Americans are watching the national economy completely crumble under Joe Biden, the conservative parallel job market is continuing to grow. Vendors in this parallel economy like to tout their traditional American values and serve as alternatives for people who are tired of shopping at woke corporations. And our next guest tonight knows all about this and more. He is Dr. Jason Sorens. He's an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research. And he joins us now. Jason, it's great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
All right. Another $1.2 billion worth of student loans completely wiped out. I think the grand total is now somewhere close to $140 billion for 4 million borrowers, people who have been struggling to pay back their student loans. And I'm just wondering, since I worked my fanny off in high school to go to college to get a scholarship, am I going to get a refund? Am I going to get money back commensurate with the amount of scholarship money that I got?
Absolutely not. And, these debt cancellation plans apply to people, no matter how much they've actually applied toward paying off their debt, so long as they've been paying this latest one for 10 years on an income-driven repayment plan. You know, even if they've been paying the minimum and have a large debt left, that's going to be canceled. And this is just creating incentives now for colleges to raise tuition. Because what they do, especially with these income-driven repayment plans, is they can raise tuition, the student takes out a bigger loan, and especially grad schools are now giving money back to the student to pay off that minimum required payment. And they know that, oh, if we just wait 10 years, the debt's going to be canceled. So this payment works out for the universities who are making a killing on this. But the taxpayers are really going to get soaked.
I mean, do these universities need more money, though? Because the money from this money, huge amounts of money from endowment, from tuition. I don't understand. Yeah, I mean, this to me just seems like downward pressure on the American people, because it's disincentivizing people to actually work hard to get scholarships, to get, you know, to major in something that is actually going to be lucrative after college.
That's right. So tuition costs are going to rise even more because of this debt cancellation. And of course, future borrowers are going to realize that probably they're going to be more debt cancellation. So why not take on even more debt? So that's all that's driving tuition costs higher. That's going to hurt the students who are actually paying cash, right, who are saving or working to pay off their tuition rather than borrowing huge amounts of money. Obviously, it's going to hugely hurt people who never go to college at all or who drop out of college. They're going to be stuck in many cases paying the bill in terms of taxes, or if they go for some classes, they're going to pay tuition and not have their debt canceled. So there's a really big cost here to the economy, to the American taxpayer. University tuition, we should find out ways to bring that down. And so subsidizing more and more ever bigger loans is the exact opposite approach to what we should be doing.
Yeah, I just think about, a lineman in Pennsylvania or a plumber in the heart of America who took out a loan to get a work truck and is actually making money and paid back the loan on that work truck. And they're missing out on all this money that the government's just apparently handing out. Okay, with respect to young people, the people who are most likely benefiting from this loan reimbursement or whatever, according to CNBC, 18 to 34 year olds, a majority of them said that the economy and jobs are their number two issue for this election cycle. So take away the issue of paying back their student loan debt. The issue for them, the number two issue for them, is still the economy and jobs. And that doesn't have anything to do with whether their student loans are paid off.
That's exactly right. Economy and jobs, housing's a big issue around the country right now. Just the cost of living in general has become a huge issue with the inflation we've suffered over the last 3 years. So, these are the issues the federal government really needs to be working on. They're trying desperately to essentially buy the votes of young people. I think that's the political angle here. But I don't think it's going to work very well, because if this just drives up the debt and continues to drive up interest rates, that's not going to be good for the economy as a whole. It's not going to be good for the job market.
Yeah. Like I said, just print more money. That's how you get more money you're injecting into the economy, right? Okay, speaking of economies, I wanted to ask you about what we are seeing. We've seen this parallel economy emerging over the last 5 or 10 years, but it has really, really come to a fever pitch. You've got companies like Public Square, Rumble, a lot of these, Truth Social tech companies in the beauty sector, the clothing sector, the food sector, everything. It seems like in every single sector of American purchasing society, there is a conservative answer to it. There is an answer on the other side of the economy, of this parallel economy. I know that you have done a lot of work in this sector, but are small businesses staffing up right now due to Bidenomics hurting the markets and the economy?
Yeah, I mean, really, manufacturing firms especially are hurting because of Bidenomics. So Bidenomics has done several things to hurt the manufacturing sector. It's the deficit spending has strengthened the dollar. It's made our exports less attractive, and that's widened the trade deficit. It's also raised taxes. And not a lot of people know that Biden actually raised taxes on businesses, especially on their equipment purchases. And that's made them less likely to invest, to purchase equipment, to increase their productivity. And beyond that, just the inflationary cycle we've gone through, which is in part a result of big deficit spending and in part mistakes by the Federal Reserve, that's really hurt the environment for business investment as well as the consumer. So small businesses have not benefited from Bidenomics, and especially if you're in the manufacturing sector, if you're producing goods.
Stick around, and we will be back in just a moment after these messages from our sponsors.
Welcome back, everybody. Back in 2020, a video showing a convoy of pickup trucks flying Trump flags driving alongside the Biden campaign bus went viral, literally just driving alongside it. Now, in response to that very harmless and quite frankly hilarious act of trolling, Biden officials sued some of those involved. So I am excited to be joined now by Joey Lynn Massaros, a Texas mother who, along with her husband Robert, is one of the defendants in that lawsuit. And she's here to give us an update. Joey Lynn, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Amanda, I am so excited to be back on with you. You were the very first to report on this story in 2021, And so I'm grateful to give you and your viewers an update on where we are nearly 4 years later.
Well, no credit to me. It is all credit to you, because when I heard your story, I thought to myself, this gal and her husband are the tip of the spear. Tell us what happened. I mean, everybody saw that video in Texas of you guys just driving along, you and a bunch of other vehicles, driving along with Trump flags. You didn't ram the bus. You didn't tailgate or anything. You were literally just driving alongside. Tell us kind of what has transpired since then.
Yes. So what was crazy to us, being brand new to politics, Trump really did bring people together. We just started getting involved for the first time in 2020. We wanted to join the Trump trains or the parading that was happening all over the nation. And when the Biden-Harris campaign bus was driving through Texas, we thought it would be a wonderful place to put a flag on the truck, to drive along, exercise free speech, and show our support for Trump. We actually hoped we would make the news, and we did. We never would have imagined that we would be getting sued under the Ku Klux Klan law of 1871 by the Biden-Harris campaign staff at the time, who later became White House officials once Biden came in office. And they are suing us in federal court with the civil rights law. It is not criminal. There are no criminal charges. It is a civil lawsuit. So, Amanda, they are claiming they have emotional damage and want financial compensation. Oh, but having 4 years in this lawsuit, we know that while they are snowflakes and they do get their feelings hurt easily, this has way more to do with infringing on free speech rights and interfering with the election. And I'd love to share that with you.
Who are the actual plaintiffs, and how on earth are they using this KKK statute?
Yes. The plaintiffs in the bus include former state senator Wendy Davis. She also ran for governor against Greg Abbott. At the time, she was running for Congress against Chip Roy. And had she won, we would have been her constituents. So she's suing her essential voter base for not agreeing with her, for having a difference of opinion. And the bus driver, a Biden staffer named David Jins, if I'm saying that right, which most people might remember his infamous tweet about loving to work for Kamala Harris when everybody was quitting, saying he loved his job. And so, yeah, so we've kind of got some White House staffers, we've got politicians, but we are being sued as individuals. And they're claiming that we violated the Ku Klux Klan law because our presence on the road in a group is synonymous with white supremacy.
Joey Lynn, I want to ask you about who's funding this, because so many times in cases like this, whether it's yours or, you know, these cases against President Trump, the cases to have him taken off the ballot, there seems to be a fairly common denominator, and that is George Soros. And I know he ties in with your case as well, right?
He definitely is funding the nonprofits that are funding this lawsuit with their 20 plus DC attorneys that are essentially fabricating stories to substantiate this lawsuit. They have hired quote unquote experts to portray us as political extremists. These experts specialize in portraying white supremacy. And then those same individuals are testifying in the 14th Amendment hearing against President Trump in Colorado in an attempt to keep him off the ballot. So this conflict of interest, where we're seeing the law being weaponized against average Americans, you're lying about it, fabricating the story, substantiating it with quote unquote experts, and then testifying that Trump is emboldening political extremists and is not fit to be on the ballot, is definitely ruining and sabotaging people's lives to interfere with the election. And we've essentially become martyrs in this. I don't think they expected us to become passionate to fight back. I think they expected to squash us. But now we believe in defending free speech to the end.
Oh, boy, they messed with the wrong Texans. I wanted to ask you about some footage. Speaking of, I think, evidence that supports the fact that they are lying. First of all, I don't know how you can be so traumatized by just seeing flags out the window of your tour bus. But, you know, I'm not a snowflake. But you, I believe your attorneys or someone involved with the case just recently obtained footage from inside that bus that paints a little bit of a different picture.
Yes, it does. That came through the discovery phase of this litigation. And I'm so grateful that we stayed in this fight. There were a couple of defendants that did grow weary and settle and apologize definitely before that footage came out. And I'm glad that we have stood by the truth and expecting justice to prevail, because we have obtained footage of the bus driver threatening to run Trump supporters the F off the highway or ram his bumper right into their insert profanity. And you can hear Wendy Davis, former state senator and at the time running for Congress, laughing on the bus, calling us names. There's a full 45-minute clip, and it is very telling in contrary to what they're claiming. And so we have hoped to get that story more out there. But of course, the false narrative is what goes viral. And then we're trying to play catch up with this character defamation.
Yeah. Joey Lynn, John and I often talk about on this show that the process is the punishment. Does it feel like this whole saga has become, has been punishment to you and your husband?
Amanda, that is a term that we have been using as well. We have grown very weary. We will not quit. And God gives us strength. And as Christians, we believe that, in fact, when we're weak, he's the strongest. And so we keep putting one foot in front of the other. But it has taken such a toll on our family. We have a 13-year-old son who has been in this with us for the last 4 years. He's grown 5 inches. It's consumed our lives. We've cashed out our 401k. You constantly have a knot in your stomach, tense shoulders. You can't sleep. You can't eat. You're wondering what's going to happen, who else it's happening to. And you understand the importance of fighting back and trying to inform other people so that they can be aware and support. And so it's just, it's a burden, but in the same sense, it's an honor to be able to fight back and defend free speech rights and to be part of a remnant that's rising to save our country.
I am so proud of you. Tell everybody very quickly where they can go and donate.
Thank you, Amanda. We desperately need support. They can find us at freespeechdefender.com.
It's hard to believe, but that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. I'm really grateful that each of you could join today. Now, one reminder, a lot of people say, hey, John, do you have an app at the Just the News? And the answer is we sure do. And not only do we have an app, it's in the Apple Store. It's also in the Android Store. It allows you to take the Just the News experience and go in three different ways. You can watch our videos and television shows. You can listen to this podcast and many others like it, like Victor Davis Hanson, or you can read the stories that we do a day, 50, 60, 70 stories a day of the breaking news, investigative reporting, accountability reporting. Go to the iOS App Store or the Android Store today. Download the Just the News app. Read, watch, listen. Three great ways to experience the Just the News content and to join the Just the News family. And if you really want to get involved with the family and say, hey, I want to support your investigative reporting, John Solomon. I want to support the great reporters and the producers and the bookers and everybody that works to make the Just the News experience possible. You can do something really inexpensive that makes a big difference. All you got to do is join the Just the News VIP Club. That's right. What do you get for the VIP Club? First off, ad-free experience on the website and on your newsletters. No ads, no dancing videos, no autoplay videos. An ad-free experience on Just the News 24/7. Plus, once a month, you get to hang out with me at justthenews.com. We have a town hall. I sit and answer your questions for an hour. We talk about issues you care about. We cover topics that the other media aren't covering. It's an incredible experience to join the family, the immediate family of the Just the News team. Great opportunity. Sometimes we bring in our reporters. It's always a delightful time. If you want to get involved in that, go to justthenews.com/subscribe. justthenews.com/subscribe. Quick way to get into the club. It's $4.99 a month, $44.99 a year. Great way to support our journalism, make a difference, and get an enormous benefit yourself. So go check it out today. All right, folks, that wraps up John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. God bless you. God bless you. Have a great night. God bless this great country of the United States. Be sure to go to justthenews.com if you need that news fix. We got you covered 24/7. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.